The captain frowned. "It's a funny thing," he said, "but why is it that the heathens and the barbarians seem to have the best places to go when they die?"
"Eh, bit of a poser, that," agreed the mate. "I suppose it makes up for 'em enjoying themselves all the time when they're alive, too."
He looked puzzled. Now that he was dead, the whole thing sounded suspicious.
"I suppose you've no idea of the way to that paradise either," said the captain.
"Sorry, Captain."
"Oh, no harm in searching, though."
The captain looked over the side. If you sailed for long enough, you were bound to strike ashore. And no harm in searching. A movement caught his eye. He smiled. Good, a sign. Maybe it was all for the best, after all. Accompanied by the ghosts of dolphins, the ghost of a ship sailed on. Seagulls never ventured this far along the desert coast. Their niche was filled by the scalby, a member of the crow family, that the crow family would be the first to disown and never talked about in company. It seldom flew, but walked everywhere in a sort of lurching hop. Its distinctive call put listeners in mind of a malfunctioning digestive system. It looked like other birds, but looked after an oil slick. Nothing ate scalbies, except other scalbies. Scalbies ate things that made a vulture sick. Scalbies would eat vulture sick. Scalbies ate everything. One of them, on this bright new morning, sidled across the flea-hopping sand, pecking aimlessly at things in case pebbles and bits of wood had become edible overnight. In the scalby's experience, practically anything became edible if it was left for long enough. It came across a mound lying on the tide line and gave it a tentative jab with its beak. The mound groaned. The scalby backed away hurriedly and turned its attention to a small domed rock beside the mound. It was pretty certain this hadn't been there yesterday either. It essayed an exploratory peck. The rock extruded a head and said, "Bugger off, you evil sod." The scalby leaped backwards and then made a kind of running jump, which was the nearest any scalby ever bothered to come to actual flight, onto a pile of sun-bleached driftwood. Things were looking up. If this rock was alive, then eventually it would be dead. The great god Om staggered over to Brother and butted him in the head with its shell until he groaned.
"Wake up, lad. Rise and shine. Hup, hup, hup. All ashore who's going ashore."
Brother opened an eye.
"What happened?" he said.
"You're alive is what happened," said Om. "Life's a beach," he remembered, "and then you die."
Brother pulled himself into a kneeling position. There are beaches that cry out for brightly coloured umbrellas. There are beaches that speak of the majesty of the sea. But this beach wasn't like that. It was merely a barren hem where the land met the ocean. Driftwood piled up on the high tide line, scoured by the wind. The air buzzed with unpleasant small insects. There was a smell that suggested that something had rotted away a long time ago, somewhere where the scalbies couldn't find it. It was not a good beach.
"Oh, God."
"Better than drowning," said Om encouragingly.
"I wouldn't know."
Brother looked along the beach. "Is there any water to drink?"
"Shouldn't think so," said Om.
"Ossory 5, verse 3, says that you made living water flow from the dry desert," said Brother.
"That was by way of being artistic license," said Om.
"You can't even do that?"
"No."
Brother looked at the desert again. Behind the driftwood lines and a few patches of grass that appeared to be dying even while it grew, the dunes marched away.
"Which way to Omnia?" he said.
"We don't want to go to Omnia," said Om.
Brother stared at the tortoise. Then he picked him up.
"I think it's this way," he said.
Om's legs waggled frantically.
"What do you want to go to Omnia for?" he said.
"I don't want to," said Brother, "but I'm going anyway."
The sun hung high above the beach, or possibly it didn't. Brother knew things about the sun now. They were leaking into his head. The Ephebians had been very interested in astronomy. Expletius had proved that the disk was 10,000 miles across. Phoebrius, who'd stationed slaves with quick reactions and carrying voices all across the country at dawn, had proved that light travelled at about the same speed as sound. And Didactylos had reasoned that, in that case, in order to pass between the elephants, the sun had to travel at least 35,000 miles in its orbit every day, or to put it another way, twice as fast as its own light, which meant that most